When was the last time that your life was completely quiet? Like, think for just a moment. Last time that there was no background music. I'm not talking background music quiet or TV humming quiet, but silent. It's hard, isn't it? It's hard to even comprehend, like, the last time that could possibly be the case, because man, our world does not default to quiet. If you think about it, nothing in your life really defaults to quiet, right? Like your phone certainly does not default to quiet, right? There's so many dings and sounds and notifications, that sort of thing. But your car does not default to quiet. You put the key in or you get into it immediately. You know, there's stimulations, this sort of thing. Your home, right? It seems like the smarter our homes get, the louder and noisier they get. It's just there's so much noise. And even your own mind doesn't default to quiet. Like, there's so much going on. The reality is, think about it, you wake up and the first instinct is not stillness, but stimulation, right? Like many of us, we reach for our phones before our feet ever hit the floor. You know what I'm talking about? And so it's like from the moment you wake, there's a stimulation. The stimulation kind of all around you, and you get into the car, and before you've even pulled out of the driveway, we've turned something on. We got a playlist, a podcast, we got the news, we got sports radio, anything to like fill the space. You have kids in the background, you have conversations that are going on. You've got work, you've got calendars and invites and schedules, oh my, right? And if we're honest, it's not just the external noise. It can be so loud in our head. You've got these questions and these questions that kind of infiltrate, like, what if this doesn't work out, right? You got this noise going on and it's like, what if things fall apart? Or what is it that I need to do now so that I be prepared to do what I need to do next, right? You got all of this noise, and that noise isn't even from the speakers. It's from the soul, right? And the reality is that, listen to me, Psalm 46 speaks into that type of chaos, that type of world where like mountains are falling and nations are raging and things are just chaotic and noisy. And in our world where it gets so loud and there's mayhem and there's instability and there's quaking, and it gets so loud, and God speaks into that with two words, two simple words, and he says, be still and know that I am God. Listen, that command to be still, it doesn't just mean to calm down. I mean, some of you are anxious right now just because of that illustration, and I get it. And the thing is, when you tell someone to calm down, it usually riles them up, right? God's not saying, hey, calm down. No, he's saying, be still. Let go. The Hebrew word here is this word rapha, which carries the idea of completely letting go, releasing, ceasing to strive. And here's how we can illustrate it too. I want you to take your fist, if you can, and I want you to squeeze them until your knuckles turn white. I want you to hold them for a few seconds, okay? Hold them and squeeze them a little bit harder, and now let go. And that feeling of letting go, of releasing, that's what is being communicated here, from white knuckles to relax. God's inviting us to surrender, to stop gripping what you were never intended to hold in the first place. Because sometimes we act like, man, if I don't hold it all together, God, I'm going to let you down. And he's like, you were never holding me up. Right? No. Let go and trust. Let go, be still, and know that I am God. You know, our culture, we're infatuated with activity and doing. You've probably heard this, don't just stand there, do something. Right? I know when I was a kid helping with yard work, I heard that a few times. Right? I know as a ball player and a coach, I've probably heard and said that a few times. Right? And you understand that, this idea that, like, hey, you're daydreaming. Hey, you're kind of, you're not being productive. Don't just stand there. Do something, Right? Sometimes we feel like God is saying that to us, and we're like, man, I don't even know. I'm just so busy. But Dallas Willard, he points out that God's invitation is often the opposite. It's as if God is saying, hey, don't just do something, stand there. Be still. Pause. Silence. Solitude. Be still. Let go. Surrender. And know that I am God. And listen, as we continue our Abide in Christ series today, that's what we're talking about, silence and solitude. In a culture where it's anything but. Right? And we know last week we talked about Sabbath. If you missed that, please go back. It's a very, very encouraging but helpful message. And next week we're talking about listening. And so we're going to try to stay in this lane of silence and solitude without kind of jumping too much out of it. But they are all indeed connected. But here's the thing. Throughout this week, it seems more than most weeks, I've talked with different people and they've asked, what are you preaching on? And as I've told them, I'm going to preach on silence. I've had a few reactions and all kind of the same. I told this one lady, she said, what are you preaching? I said, silence. She said, oh gosh, I hate silence. Right? I told someone else, as they said, literally, I said, ew, silence. What do you even say about silence, right? Hey, just so you know, like on Wednesday nights, we have this class and we kind of go deeper. Okay, spoiler alert, if you want to come experience some silence, Wednesday night, be here, 6:30. We're going to kind of do some of that. And then I even told my youngest son, he asked me, like, what are you preaching on? And he's 8 now. And he said, silence, well, that should be easy. Just don't say anything. And I was like, that's on the table. You know, I might not. I might just get up there. And it's going to be amazing to just stand there and watch. But man, silence, maybe you have the same disdain for silence too, right? Like anybody hate silence? You just be honest. Anybody? Like, it's awkward, right? We even call it awkward silence. And I get it. For a moment, though, before we, like, talk silence to kind of set this up, I want you to think about volume, right? Like TV volume. And here's the deal. I've not used a Georgia Bulldog illustration in a little while, but today you're going to get one. When we watch Georgia football games at my house, I'm very particular. Not many people know this. I'm very particular on what volume the game is on. Okay, and it doesn't stay the same. In fact, our TV goes 0 to 100, and I will only watch the game on numbers that correspond to my favorite player's jersey numbers, okay? As the modern-day philosopher Michael Scott once said, I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious. Okay, and so here's the deal. Pre-game, probably volume 14 for a quarterback, Gunnar Stockton. Right? We're on a good drive, 27. My favorite running back, Nick Chubb, wore 27. Right? We need a big defensive stand, 47 for David Pollock. Okay, it was great. And then here's the deal. If it gets crazy, if it's like championship level football, so big game, big SEC rival, primetime slot, we might crank it all the way up to 84 for Ladd McConkey. Okay? But here's the thing. Here's the thing. You got to know this. You ever watch a game with me? It'll be like that, but as soon as it's commercial, zero. I don't want to hear that. Mute. Maybe one for Zachariah Branch, but it is like silent. And here's what happens inevitably every time. There's someone in the room who's still talking at game level when it gets silent. You know this moment? It's super awkward, right? Like you're up here and it gets dead quiet. This happened to me last night at the fifth and sixth grade championship game in basketball. I'm coaching, okay? The crowd is nuts. It's crazy. And there's this moment, this kid, I've warned the refs. You get this, Stefan. I've warned the refs already about this guy's pushing off. He's coming down. In the heat of the moment, this kid pushes off. And I yell right here, 4 feet from the ref, you can't push off. But everyone else chose to be dead quiet at that moment. And he did call the foul. And then he slowly turned to me. And he didn't tee me up, but he did say, let me call the game. And then one of my friends said, that's my pastor. And so, listen, it can be awkward. We get it, that silence, the volume kind of thing. But hear me in this, and you get it. Let me connect it. When the volume drops, even a quiet voice becomes clear. Now imagine your soul has a volume knob. Most of us, we lived with it turned all the way up. If it's 1 to 10, we're probably living at an 8, right? It's constant commentary and input and noise and thoughts and plans and just chaos is constant flowing here. And Jesus says in John 27, check this out. Jesus uses this illustration about being a shepherd. I love this right here. In John 10:27, he says, "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them and they follow me." I love the way the Christian Standard Version writes. It says, "My sheep hear my voice." And like I said, we'll dive more into listening next week, but we have to position ourselves and posture ourselves in silence so we can even hear. Church, get this. You cannot hear a whisper when your volume is turned all the way up. And you cannot recognize a voice you never slow down long enough to listen for. You know, our natural tendency is to drift toward distraction, toward the noise, but silence is intentional resistance. It's uncommon in our culture. Silence, it's intentional resistance because nothing defaults to it, so you have to be intentional for it. You know, Lance Witt, in his book Replenish, he writes that solitude, it feels counterintuitive to the way most of us live because solitude, it requires quiet when we're used to noise. It requires stillness when we're used to busyness. It requires internal when we're used to going external. And then listen to this. It requires facing who we are when we're used to projecting who we want people to think we are. That's part of why it's so awkward. Because what rushes to your mind when it gets quiet? Right? That's why many of us, we avoid it. The Dutch priest Henry Nouwen, he says something really profound when I'm talking about stepping into this place of solitude, like choosing the silence. He says, "Solitude is the place where Christ remodels us into his own image and frees us from the victimizing compulsions of the world." Listen to this. "In solitude, we become aware that our worth is not the same as our usefulness." Because it's just us and God. There's nothing we can do to earn his mercy or love or favor. In the silence, we have to deal with those things that rush in. You see, silence, it begins to expose us. Like, think, when you stop the noise, what is it that immediately rushes us? Why is it awkward? Is it anxiety? Is it regret? Is it fear? Is it unfinished conversations? You see, silence doesn't create all of that chaos, it reveals it. And that's why many of us, we keep the volume up so we don't have to deal with it. We keep it going. We keep the schedule full. Tim Keller says this. He says, "Silence exposes our idols." So not just it exposes our thoughts or insecurities or anxieties. No, it exposes our idols. Like, what you cannot stop thinking about when everything else stops might be what you actually believe is holding your world together. Think of that. Like, the things that rush in, that might actually be what you're placing your trust in. And that's why it's uncomfortable. And yet Scripture does not just give us a command to be still. It gives us a model. In Luke chapter 5, Jesus, he shows us what this looks like, but it gives us a rhythm and a pattern to follow. And so Luke 5, we're introducing Jesus. He's kind of been on this run of miracles and teaching, and his popularity is just exploding, and it's infiltrating out, it's rippling out, and people are hearing about Jesus and his ministry. And so they're coming to hear him and to be healed by him, and it's exploding. And so as people are coming and the noise level rises, we get to this moment, and it says, "But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed." This word "often" here matters, and it matters a lot. Because Jesus illustrates, he demonstrates, he models what it looks like to manage the chaos and the noise in your life, that it was often. See, think about it. Like the pinnacle of your career, the pinnacle of your life or your schooling, whatever that is, and just all the pressure and everything that comes with it. right? And we could so easily be overwhelmed, but Jesus had this rhythm to handle it and to not be overwhelmed. So you see, when he would withdraw to pray, this was not emergency prayer, but it was also not burnout recovery. It wasn't like, oh, I just need a break. I got to get. No, no, no. It was a rhythm to his life. But notice, just because he withdrew to lonely places doesn't mean that he was all alone. No, because in the silence and the solitude is where Jesus communed with the Father. You know, some of us hate the silence because we feel lonely. And the word for you today is to be reminded that you have a God who will never leave nor forsake you. And when you feel lonely, you are not all alone. You are not all alone. And Jesus, he demonstrated that he would get by himself to connect with the Father, and he did so often. I'll give some examples of this. You see, before he chose the 12 disciples, okay, which were like, a bunch of them are teenagers, okay? These are gonna be ragtag group of guys who are gonna help usher in the gospel to the world, okay? And so, big moment, big decision coming. Before he does that, he spent the night in prayer on a mountainside. So big decision coming in his life, silence and solitude. Then we read Matthew 14 that after, okay, so now on the flip side, after he fed 5,000, the crowd was ready to crown him king. They were ready to be like, hey, let's go. This is our boy. This is our guy. This is who we've been waiting on. Let's usher him in and celebrate in that moment. Okay, the peak of popularity, he dismissed them and he slipped away by himself to pray. Silence and solitude. Before he walked on the water, he first knelt in the silence. And in Luke 9, when Peter declared that you are the Messiah, this is a game-changing moment. Peter, okay, nicknamed the Rock. Jesus is gonna build this on. And Peter gets it. This is huge. He gets it. Says, you are the Messiah. That moment of clarity came in a setting shaped by private prayer. And again, at the transfiguration, while he was praying, Jesus' glory was revealed. In Luke 11, when the disciples said, Lord, teach us to pray. We talked about this just a few weeks ago. They said, Lord, teach us to pray. They were moved to ask that because they had watched him withdraw to do so. They saw the rhythm of silence and solitude in Matthew 26 on the night of his betrayal with the weight of the cross. The weight of the sins of the world weighing on him, knowing what was to come, Jesus withdrew to the Garden of Gethsemane and prayed, not my will, but yours be done. And so in success, he withdrew. In decision, he withdrew. In revelation, he withdrew. In crisis, he withdrew. In suffering, he withdrew. Again and again, before defining moments and after public victories, Jesus turned down the noise and stepped into the silence with the Father. You see, Jesus was not driven by urgency. He was led by intimacy. He wasn't driven by urgency. The mission was critical, yes. But nothing was more important than abiding, remaining, connecting, communing with God the Father. And he ensured that he did that often. And if the Son of God needed to be still to remain aligned with the Father, what makes us think we don't? You know, I believe one of the reasons we resist silence is because it threatens our illusion of control. We think that, okay, if I stop, will everything unravel? You ever felt that? Like, if I unplug, will I fall behind? Like, if I let go, will we lose momentum, or will things just start to get out? I've worked so hard. If I stop now, things are just going to regress. But silence confronts self-sufficiency. It asks whether we truly believe, whether we actually know that God is God and that we are not. You know, years ago, I heard a local preacher say something that stuck with me ever since. He said, in the presence of God the Father, say everything, but in the presence of God the King, say nothing. That in our prayer life, this rhythm of silence should abound. That yes, we come to God as a Father and you pour your heart out to him. But then you also have these moments of solitude and silence where you are still and you know that he is God because he is the King of Kings, the King of the universe. And you are in his presence, and so you are still and silent. And Jesus modeled that to us. You see, this is where formation comes in. Again, this whole series, Abide in Christ, talking about connecting, remaining in him, and he's molding us to look and live and love more and more like Jesus. Okay, so that's formation, being transformed into the likeness of Christ. Well, Justin Early, he reminds us that we're always being formed. So think about this. And I shared this about a month ago, that the question is not whether habits shape us. The question is, which habits are you allowing to shape you? Right? For example, like we all have something with us probably right now, a device, a phone. That phone constantly shapes you, right? Your commute, it shapes you. What you listen to shapes you. What you allow to come in through your television or through screens in your home, that's shaping you. That's discipling your family. The late night scrolling, the doom scrolling, those kinds of things, it shapes you. The books that you read, that you consume, all that, it shapes you. And while we can't completely detangle the mess that we live in, we understand this is the culture. It's a noisy culture. We can't completely detangle that mess. We can create deliberate patterns and habits that turn the volume down. We can control that. And here's the thing, oftentimes we confuse peace and quiet. We can control one of those. We can control the noise, but sometimes we mistake quiet for peace. Okay? No. The quiet reveals, it exposes you so that you can allow God to handle that, to deal with that, to bring peace. Right? You with me? Okay, and so these rhythms of silence are so important. I want to share with you. Jesus gave us all these examples, okay? But it was part of his daily life, part of his life. And so we look at, all right, 2026, what would some rhythms of silence, very, very practical rhythms of silence look like? And I want to give you three of them. Three, and I encourage you at least try one this week. At least try. Maybe you're going to say, hey, I'm gonna go for all three, but at least try to implement one of these rhythms of silence this week. The first is this. I call it the silent bookend. The silent bookend. Hey, listen, here's the deal. We said we wake up. Oftentimes, the first thing that we touch or interact with isn't our spouse. It's a device. And so here's my challenge to you is that the first voice of your day should not be the world's urgency. It should be God's truth. And the last voice of your night should not be comparison and outrage. It should be surrender. And so take the time, be still, and book in your day with silence. I promise it will help center you on Christ. It will. Like I'm a work in progress. I'm a testimony in progress of this. I've seen this happen more and more in my life. Listen, I want to encourage you with this. It's scripture before screens and surrender before sleep. And so book in your day with a few minutes. And that can expand. It could start with three. It could go to five. It could go to 10, 15. It can expand. But book in your day with intentional silence. Remember, it's being before doing. It's abiding before activity. And create intentional moments of silence to start and finish each day with. Okay, so that's bookend of silence. The second rhythm of silence I challenge you with is this, the quiet commute. Okay, for some, the most spiritual thing that you could do this week is to drive in silence. Literally, like drive in silence. No playlist, no radio, no sports talk. See, it's less about carving out more time for silence, and it's more about leveraging the time you already have. Like you taking ownership of it. In other words, you don't need more time, you need less noise. Okay, so what if the first few minutes of your commute, first 5-10 minutes of your commute became a time of prayer, reflection, and silence? All right, like you don't have to go to a monastery to do this. You can start in your driveway. And I get it. Some of you are like, man, I work remote, or I take public transit, or we do rideshare, or whatever. And some are like, man, I drop kids off to school. That's my commute. And that's anything but solitude and silence. But once they get out, because you see, our tendency is to always think like, this wouldn't work for me, instead of asking like, how could this work for me? Right? And that needs to be the posture that we take. You know, college students, young adults, folks who work out, you understand the trick of like putting in the headphones because like people are less likely to distract you with that. You can do things to create intentional space for silence and solitude. But for a moment, I want to talk to the men in the room who head off to work each day. Listen, your commute back home is prime time to pause and cover your household in prayer. Okay, dads, pause the podcast and ask God, how can I serve my family tonight? Like for real, in your quiet commute, silently prepare yourself to be fully present. And I'm speaking to the men because I am one. And I get this doesn't just mean it's for the men, but it's especially for the men. So before you walk through the door, pause. Ask God to help you leave the stress of the day in the driveway. You pull in, you take a deep breath, you walk in. You got little kids, you walk in, you hug mama, and you get on the floor and you play with those babies until they're wiped out. Be completely present. Kids get a little older, help with homework, run the taxi, spend time on their turf, knock out the chores, pray over your family, serve your wife. Dads, you should go to bed exhausted. Not just from work, but because you were so fully present and pouring yourself out on your family. God's equipped you and placed you and positioned you there. Don't outsource that. And a great place to start is a quiet commute before the chaos. It's to control what you can, turn that volume down, because like Jesus, he paused before the moments that mattered most. And so before you walk through the door, make sure that you're actually gonna be home. You're gonna be fully present there. And finally, listen, our last rhythm of silence I wanna encourage you with is this, a weekly digital pause. Okay, Luke says that Jesus often withdrew. So my question is, what is your often? Like, what is that? Can you create a rhythm in your life? Yes, the bookend is helpful from a daily standpoint. The commute, absolutely, those are phenomenal. But can you carve out maybe 20 minutes on Saturday morning? Maybe you go on a walk with no headphones. Like maybe it's sitting on your porch without stimulation. Maybe it's like on the back deck with some sweet tea and you just in silence. And you're just there and you create this rhythm of leaning in so that whether it's success or decision or revelation or crisis or suffering, we can withdraw to be alone and silent with our Father in heaven. You see, withdrawing allows for recalibration. And so you step away to be still and to remind yourself who God is and who isn't God, so that you can then step back in with clarity and strength. And listen, none of these are super dramatic. They weren't for Jesus either, and that's the reality, that's the point, is that formation rarely happens like in dramatic bursts. It happens in faithful repetition. And habits are really the railings that kind of keep you moving in the right direction when your emotions are tired and your willpower is worn thin. But listen, all of this would collapse into moralism if not for the gospel. And so I want to spend a moment right there to make sure that we are centered on and only Christ. You see, there was this moment in particular in Jesus' life when he did not withdraw to a silent place. No, instead, he embraced the chaos and the noise and the darkness on the cross. I mean, you talk about internal and external noise. Like there was the beating. I want you to put yourself in this context. There was the beating and betrayal. There was agony and angst. There's shouts and screams. There's whips and weeping. You've got crowds who are literally cussing and crowns of thorns. They're like crushing his head. And there's gasping and clapping. There's even like wailing and there's laughing in church at the cross. The volume of the world was turned all the way up. And it was there that Jesus experienced ultimate abandonment so that your solitude would never be empty. Listen, he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me so that you'd never have to? He took on the wrath of our sin so that we could be connected and remain and abide in Christ. That through Jesus, there's nothing, there's no depth nor height, nothing that can separate us from the love of God. That's why Psalm 46 says, be still and know that I am God. It's not a threat, it's an invitation, it's perspective. It's abiding, and you can unclench your fist from sovereignty that wasn't yours to carry. It's his. And listen, when you pause long enough to know that he is God, you stop trying to be. And look, while we're instructed to be still and listen to what God will be. And we'll wrap with this in just a moment. So God says, be still and know that I am God. Okay, so that's our job. You be still and know that I am God. And this is what he says. And I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. You be still. I am God. You silent. I'm sovereign. You let go because I still got it. And that's the message that we can hold on to, and that's the truth, that we can be still because God has got it. Listen, if I preached 3,000 words on silence and I didn't pause long enough for us to at least sit in it for a moment, I would do a disservice. I'd be a bit arrogant and I'd miss an opportunity. So here's what I want to do. In just a moment, after some silence, we'll have a couple reflection questions to think about. But I want to take just a minute and for us to sit in silence, to be still, and just know that he is God and that you are not. So sit in silence. Okay, now as we reflect, I want you to process two questions. The first is this: when the noise stops, what rushes in? Just then, you spent some time in silence. What were those thoughts that were trying to creep in? And that's the kind of thing that we need to be honest about and bring to God, let him handle it. Because it reveals, it rises to the top. So we say, God, would you expose that in me? Would you search me? Father, would you make me more like Jesus? And so what are those things that rushed in when the noise stopped? And the other is this: where in your existing rhythm could you turn the volume down this week? Like I gave some ideas, but for you, where can you intentionally carve out or create or turn the volume down? So let's reflect on that. In church, sometimes the most spiritual thing that you can do is to just slow down and be reminded that God is still God and that you are still not. So I encourage you, as the psalmist writes, be still and know that I am God, because he will be exalted and that God knows you. If you would, let's stand. Worship, respond in prayer together.